Well, he said, never let a serious crisis go to waste. And so they are using tainted hamburger, peanut butter, and spinach to take control of the nation's food chain. Their legislation leads us to ask, what will the food safety totalitarians allow us to eat?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 669th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friend over there in the Eastern Mediterranean in the little village of Acrodelia, who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hi.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phones.
Hello.
Folks, presidential advisor Rahm Emanuel has become somewhat famous for saying, never let a serious crisis go to waste. There is a lot of tactical cunning in Mr. Emanuel's command. Consider by way of example some good old-fashioned food poisoning. What would happen if your neighbor ate a sandwich containing some tainted mayonnaise, got sick, and died? Well, nothing would happen, right? An accident is just an accident, and that would be that. But what would happen if a couple hundred people around the country got sick eating tainted hamburger, peanut butter, or spinach, and several died? Well, the news would pick up the story and get it rolling until we had a full-scale food safety crisis on our hands. People everywhere would cry out for help from their government. Protect me, please protect me, they would cry. Now, how do you not let a full-scale food safety crisis go to waste? Well, you introduce legislation to put the government in total control of the nation's food chain, and thus in total control of everyone's life. It would be the ultimate win. Your organization would become the nation's food safety totalitarians, and people would only be able to eat what you allow them to eat. Ladies and gentlemen, there are many pieces of food safety legislation contending for approval in Washington, D.C. these days. And by golly, this legislation leads us to ask, who is taking advantage of the food safety crisis to become our nation's food safety totalitarians? How will the food safety totalitarians make our food safe? And what will the food safety totalitarians allow us to eat? Here to help us find an answer, we have Nicole Johnson, citizen journalist from Ventura, California. Nicole, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hello, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you aboard. Well, a citizen journalist, I saw your work in Op-Ed News. Somebody emailed me a link, and I picked it up, and I thought, well, this is really interesting. Somebody who's taking a rather negative outlook on all of the food safety legislation going through Congress. You know, Nicole, one of the things we always ask our guests is, who pays your way?
My family. I mean, I do this on my own time. My husband would love it if I could get paid for this. I'll tell you that much. I get a lot back complaint a whole bunch.
Okay, good. Well, fair enough, because I just wonder, when I asked others to join us today and they heard that Nicole Johnson was going to be on the radio, they ran for the hills.
Oh, no.
Well, yes. And Nicole, these were some very big organizations. We're talking about the Pew Family Trust. I mean, they must
have...
You
asked them?
Yes, I asked them. And I asked one of their organizations, what the heck is it called?
Make Our Food Safe.
Make Our Food Safe, right.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them, and when they asked who's going to be on the show with them, I said, well, Nicole Johnson. And they said, and they disappeared.
Oh, my gosh.
So
that's interesting.
Nicole Johnson, what did you do to scare such important people away?
I guess I'm following the money.
Uh-huh.
I thought that's what journalists were supposed to do.
Yeah.
It's not always done, but if you go back, there's a lot to smell here.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it that way.
So when you say follow the money where? What money are we talking about?
Well, you know, I got interested in this subject because
And the subject is food safety legislation.
The subject is food safety legislation. Yeah. I mean, seriously, this is something it sounds like a real snoozer, and I would not normally have paid much attention to it. But last spring, there was a lot of focus on, oh, Monsanto's behind it, all these mm-hmm. people are behind it, and then someone from Monsanto went and actually wrote to all these people and said, no, we're not, and how could, you know, where's your proof? And people just buckled under, and everyone was made to look really foolish. And I thought, that's interesting. Why would they get involved with this? And so I started looking around, and very quickly I discovered, you know, who was writing the reports that were the basis of some of the legislation that was coming into Congress. And very quickly I recognized the name Michael Taylor. He's considered the poster boy for the revolving door between corporate America and our government. So
there you are. You started smelling.
Well, that was the first thing I saw, and he was even credited with writing it. And there was and the underwriter of all of this work was the Trust for America's Health, which is kind of a subsidiary of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Now that's a foundation with a ton of money, and they're able to use it to influence political outcomes. That's mm-hmm. the amazing thing about trusts and foundations in this country, is that massive industrial fortunes, it looks like they're giving money away, but what they're really doing is putting into a system that they control it. What is done with it.
So they're not really giving money away. They're really investing money, right?
Yeah, very much so. We're very cognizant here about campaign contributions, but as a nation, we're pretty blind to this other really mm-hmm. insidious way massive fortunes of, you know, elite money get to influence the political process.
Well, before we get into the, you know, what you found when you turned over the rocks, let me ask you how serious this food crisis really is.
See, generally we have a lot of people eat every day, and they, you know,
about 300 million
sick.
People are eating,
you know,
every day, right?
Yeah. Mostly, it is a pretty darn good system. What I have been studying for years is how the long term effects of a lot of the ingredients that are approved mm-hmm. by the government and in our food system. And I spend, you know, a lot of time trying to keep those ingredients away from my family.
Right.
And they're not labeled, so you really have to be vigilant, and it makes you turn toward organics.
Sure.
Which
and
makes you have to pay more money to ensure you don't have food with, you know, a dose of pesticides mm-hmm. still attached. And there's a cumulative effect with all of that.
And, of course, another thing we're talking about is genetically modified organisms, which
exactly.
takes us right
they're
back to Michael Taylor and Monsanto. But so, by and large, we have 300 million people eating food, you know,
and
three, four
fine.
Times a day. And,
yeah.
and a few of them of us get sick from tainted this and that. And so
and a big deal is made out of it.
And a big deal. You know, in Food Chain episode number 631, we featured a food lawyer for food safety who sues companies that sell people bad food.
Mm-hmm.
And he made the comment that in his, like, 30 years in business, he's never seen an instance in which local food has been the subject of a food contamination incident.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're... by inference, I guess, what we're really talking about here are industrial-scale food operations that mass-produce food and send them around. And that
seems... Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at what is really risky, it's production processes that are used by industrial-scale mm-hmm. operations. You know, with the leafy greens scare, for example, you had that baby lettuce and those little baby spinach things, and they're growing differently than head lettuce and other leafy greens. And they're processed differently, and they're all washed together. It's a huge scale of operation.
It's like taking
very different than what your local or smaller farmer that's selling at the farmer's market is going to be.
Okay, so what we're really talking about here then is we have a few incidents, and relatively few incidents, if you think about the amount of eating we do and how many people actually got sick. It's boy, it's...
Yeah, compare, I mean, yes, it's 76,000, I think, is the, or some number like that, mm-hmm. is per year, and 5,000 end up dead. And then you compare that to 700,000 people who die from government-approved medicine.
There you go.
You know, let the FDA deal with that problem before they start getting expanded powers over our farms.
Okay, folks, you're tuned into The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking food safety totalitarians, the people who want to take over our food chain 100% control. That's what they want, and they want to make our food safe, and then they want to tell you and I what we can eat. We're talking with Nicole Johnson, a citizen journalist, but we're not talking with members of the Pew Family Trust, nor their organization Never Let whatever the heck it was. I forgot what it was, but they have a
Make Our Food Safe
organization. And when they heard that Nicole Johnson is on the program today, they ran for the hills. So she must be a very important person. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, Rahm Emanuel said, never let a serious crisis go to waste. And so we have a food safety crisis, and there are a whole bunch of parties who are jumping on the bandwagon so that they won't let this crisis, food safety crisis, go to waste. They're pitching all kinds of legislation to the federal government to encourage them to take total control of the nation's food chain so that you and I will only have food approved as safe by the federal government. Does that make you feel safe? We're at 800-624-2665, 831-4791080. We're talking with Nicole Johnson, citizen journalist from Ventura, California, who obviously is a very, very important person, because when the Pew Family Trusts heard that she was going to be on the food chain, they ran for the hills. And so my question now, Nicole, is who is behind this food safety legislation? When we first did this show on this food safety legislation, we were talking about Democratic Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, I believe of Connecticut, who introduced legislation in the House for food safety legislation. And people said that her husband was a Monsanto lobbyist. And I just got to thinking that, well, that's an interesting combination there, that the Monsanto Corporation would be involved in food safety. So tell us about who is involved in this food safety legislation.
Yeah, well, that didn't strike me as real deep at the time. but when I started to look into it, and I found that Michael Taylor was involved in writing reports for Trust for America's Health, an organization that Margaret Hamburg at the time was also associated with, and she at the time was also on the board of the Rockefeller Foundation. That was much more interesting to me, especially
okay.
considering that she was later appointed as head of the FDA, and Michael Taylor was being pulled in as part of the food safety working group.
Let's take us back then to...
This is just in the early Obama's first days.
Okay, take us back and tell us who this Michael Taylor character is.
Well, initially he has been a longtime FDA staff lawyer who... was also a partner at a company, a law firm called King & Spalding. They're an old firm. I guess they came up, its initial founders rose to prominence during railroad consolidations, and they currently have clients that are about a third of the Fortune 100 companies, representing all of their big pharmaceuticals, petroleum, you name it. They've got the top ones there. So he has a mindset that is protecting, you know, transnational corporations and their business agendas,
mm-hmm.
which are global in nature. He's been brought into the FDA and put into various positions and has implemented things that are very good for those kind of clients.
Just a second. As he was working for King and Spalding, was he also did he also have Monsanto as a client?
Yes, he did.
And what did he do?
And after he left the FDA, after a couple of jobs, he went and worked as Monsanto's vice president of public policy, which
I guess that would be pretty
disconcerting.
That would indicate a pretty close relationship then between Monsanto and Michael Taylor, if he leaves his law firm and becomes their vice president, and then he left there, but what did he do for Monsanto?
When he was working there, he was his vice president of public policy. He was up for a year and a half,
Well, he did a very important thing for Monsanto, though,
Of course. Back when he was at the FDA, he got started getting the GMOs to market without any sort of labeling or even safety and toxicological testing.
So, in other words...
Was it safe to eat? Was it safe to plant? Was it safe for the environment? What about our health?
Mm-hmm.
All of these questions were tossed aside to rapidly get it into the marketplace.
So Michael Taylor was the point man in the federal government for Monsanto to allow them to put genetically modified organisms into food without doing any food safety studies.
Exactly.
Oh, that's a handy one then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that would indicate a very tidy relationship there, though, I guess. So, but what about these other nonprofit organizations that ostensibly represent consumers, like Make Our Food Safe, Pew Family Trust Organization, and Ralph Nader's Food and Water Watch? How do they get mixed up they're mixed up in this too, right?
They are, and it's troubling for Food and Water Watch in particular, because they have people who have produced some really good research that have looked into, the ramifications of various policies, and I actually use them in my analysis of what the impacts of this food safety legislation is going to be. And I don't understand how they can sit back and go, the legislation looks good to us. But then you have to look into where they're funded to try to figure that out.
Where are they funded? Who gives them the money?
I wrote them a few times, and I never got an answer, but I have seen that they get money from the Tides Foundation. I would have liked to have asked them about that, but that's pretty much of a clearinghouse for pharmaceutical-based trust to funnel money into environmental groups.
Well, let's go to Make Our Food Safe, which is funded, I think, by the Pew Family Trust.
Pew Charitable Trust underwrites a lot of their endeavors, as well as the Trust for America's Health, that they have underwritten the reports that were produced.
So is the Pew Family Trust funding these organizations and this legislation by extension because they think it's actually going to make our food safer?
Well, what they say, it sounds like that when you read their material. It seems all kind of reasonable, but if you step back and go and look at the situation overall and say, what's making our food unsafe? It's not, vegetables are not inherently unsafe. What we're not looking at is the source of enteric pathogens. I've got a child trying to get in the house in the room here. excuse me.
That makes you a true citizen journalist when your kid's trying to get in the door.
My husband's there. I thought he was feeding them, but they're trying to come into the office here. Pardon me. Now let me get my thoughts back. We're not looking at the source of enteric pathogens. We never had E. coli 0157H7 until the 80s. That's when it was first identified.
Right.
And it came out of your confined area feedlot operations.
Or at least that's the theory.
If you have grass-fed animals, they're they have a good balance in their system. Mm-hmm. When you put them on in these lots and you feed them a diet they're not evolved to eat.
High acid stomachs.
Well, it's, it's this high carbohydrate, and they end up, it acidifies their system.
Right.
And E. coli 157H7 is just an acid resistant strain of bacteria that is normally present.
Which makes it especially pathogenic in our systems because we don't have.
Because our system is acidic, so it can thrive even in ours and start a whole chain reaction.
Yeah, back to these nonprofit organizations and their interesting bedfellow relationships with large corporations like Monsanto. Don't understand how that worked, how they managed to come together in this one food safety wonderland. How did that work? I mean, it seems like, you know, those organizations are ostensibly for consumers, and yet here they are.
It's worth looking into more. When you find something that you would imagine that they would respond a certain way based on what you understood them to be all about,
and
they're worth another look.
Yeah, and of course, they're not here to represent themselves today because they heard that Nicole Johnson, citizen journalist, is going to be on the food chain. And so that was the end of that. There was no more communication after that. So you said something that you're awfully threatening to these people, and I don't know what it is, but we'll find out. We have a half hour left.
Okay.
Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about the food chain totalitarians, those people who want to take over our food chain, make it safe. What do you think? Do you feel safe? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and join us. We're having a riot right back. Will, he said, never let a serious crisis go to waste. And so they are using tainted hamburger, peanut butter, and spinach to legislate their total control of the nation's food chain. Their legislation leads us to ask, who or how will the food safety totalitarians make our food safe? And if you think about it, that's kind of an interesting one, don't you think? How on earth are these organizations like Monsanto and the Pew Family Trust and all of those people and the Food and Water Watch, and how are they going to make our food safe? Well, let's ask somebody who just might know because she's been looking at it for a while, citizen journalist Nicole Johnson from Ventura, California. And Nicole, how on earth did you become involved in this subject?
I've been very interested in agricultural issues for a number of years. My interest got peaked when I was reading a book by Gore Vidal called Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace, and it was talking about problems in the rural heartland. And in the midst of the discussion, he talked about a specific document, a report produced by an organization called the Committee for Economic Development. And it was a committee that was just like full of 200 CEOs and chairmen of major corporations, financial interests, insurance, meatpacking, railroads, you name it, everybody but farmers. And the issue before them was, you know, the problem with American agriculture was that there, in their opinion, there were too many farmers. And I found this to be a pretty alarming statement by a group of business people to identify that the problem that we have too many farmers in this country, and that they put together a bunch of solutions to this problem.
Mm.
There it was in black and white. I printed it out on the internet, off the internet. Since then, I went and found other reports they had put together. But this one, in black and white, was really startling to see that how a group of unelected and unaccountable people can use their power and influence to affect such a change.
Well, listen to this, Nicole. I was just emailed in. It's a quote. Food is power. We use it to change behavior. Mm-hmm. Some may call that bribery. we do not apologize. These are the words of Catherine Bertini, Executive Director of the United Nations World Food Program, and who was once our very own former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Agriculture. Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay. But let me go back to the question. How are the food safety totalitarians going to make our food safe by taking over everything, control of everything?
Well, I don't think they're going to make it any safer at all because they never deal with the source of the pathogens. The legislation pretty well protects the grain and the meat complex from being regulated in a meaningful way.
Which is really where the
If you really wanted to deal with it, you deal with what we feed these animals that ends up making us sick. It's just kind of nature's blowback. We've really pushed animals, livestock, to their biological limit in terms of forcing them to eat something that rapidly makes them gain weight so that they can slaughter them faster.
Let me change directions on you a little bit here.
Okay.
You know, a couple decades ago, the word organic belonged to small family-scale farmers.
Uh-huh.
And nobody really knew what it meant except that it was their word and they used it. And it kind of protected them from, gave them a little niche in which they could live.
And then the government regulated it.
Yeah, no, they went out and they asked the government to regulate it. They petitioned the government to regulate it. They begged the government to take over the word organic and own it. And the government took over the word organic and they owned it. And now it's USDA federal property. But that allowed others, large corporations, to go to the federal government and said, your rules are too restrictive. Mm-hmm. Loosen them up so we can play too. And so the federal government loosened up those organic rules and regulations. And they then became, those rules then became accessible to large corporations that otherwise would not have been able to play. And as a consequence, organic is now an industrial industry. It's huge and growing. And the little farmers that the word once protected are out in the cold again. So I look at this food safety legislation, and I wonder, here we have all of these people running around saying, protect me, protect me, protect me. And all of the corporations are going, yeah, let's protect them.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what's going on?
Yeah. And the way they're going to do it, they're saying they're going to, they want something called HACCP to be applied from farm to table.
What's HACCP?
HACCP stands for Hazard Analysis Critical Control Points. And it's an approach to food safety that, in its origins, is a very good thing. It came out of Pillsbury, and when I was doing my research, I dug this far that deep in order to understand it because I didn't understand how it was actually being used.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I discovered that. It's a very good system used in a voluntary basis.
It's kind of something that all farmers do all the time, isn't it? If you're growing food, you're always paying attention.
It was originally developed specifically for industrial produced processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really important. It was just for processed foods.
Right.
The idea was to build food safety into the production process. You did that by having a point at which you either cooked it, you refined it, you dried it. You did something that by doing so, you'd whack out any of the pathogens that might be present.
Mm-hmm.
Now, applying that to raw food production, raw food in, raw food out production,
right,
there's no critical control point that will kill pathogens. Now, the man I just found who had been...
What does that mean? You lost me there.
Sorry. It means that it's being inappropriately applied to a point in production at which you're not having cooked food.
Okay, so what you're saying is that a law that was designed to protect the manufacturer of automobiles is being applied to...
Automobiles.
or the, just, you know, a law that was designed to protect one thing is being used to protect an entirely different things, right?
Yeah, it was used so that it was a way for corporations, processors to know that they were they'd have a safe product at the end. And they did this in response to problems they had with their earlier quality control system that relied on product testing. Product testing took, you know, it would take a whole lot of material to get a statistically reliable reading that you had safe product.
Okay.
And the problem is, you know, a very low level of contamination can go undetected.
Okay.
So it was ineffective, and they wanted to get rid of
We're going to have to take a quick break here, Nicole, so hang on with that. And when we come back, we're going to go to Marshall, who has an observation about the sterilization of food. So it seems like the two of you are coming together right here, and we'll be able to pick that up. This is
okay.
The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. Today we're talking about food safety and who is out there that wants to protect us. And do you feel safe because they are? 800-642-665, 831-479-1080. Well, folks, the food safety totalitarians are out there going to make certain that your food is safe. How are they doing that? Well, they're legislating food safety, which is to say that they're legislating total control of the food chain from your neighbor who grows carrots all the way up to whatever. And so we wonder, what is it that they're going to allow us to eat? You know, if you had total control of the food chain, what would you allow us to eat? Would you allow us to eat farmers market food? Ha ha ha. Or would you force us to eat what your company manufactures? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We're talking with citizen journalist Nicole Johnson from Ventura, California, who is a very, very important person. We know that because when we asked the Pew Family Trust to sit in on the show with us today to talk about their efforts to legislate food safety, and they heard Nicole Johnson was on the line, they ran for the hills. And so we are fortunate to be left with Nicole. And we're going to pick up Marshall, who has a question or a comment about food safety and sterilization. Marshall, welcome to the Food Chain.
I just want to say that I love your show because I love food.
Amen.
All right. I think last weekend you were talking about pasteurization.
Oh, I don't know if it was last weekend because I forgot what I did last
week. Yeah, me too. But sterilizing everything.
Okay.
And just recently I heard on the radio that, of course, there's good bacteria.
Well, right. There's two elements to me about, and thank you very much for the call, Marshall. Really appreciate it. And in line with that, another call wants to know about the long-term effects of irradiation. So I guess both Marshall and somebody else are asking the same question.
Right.
How would you respond to that, Nicole Johnson?
Yeah, I think it's true that things, irradiation can wipe out pathogens, but at the same time, it's going to wipe out important enzymes and other biologically available nutrients that we rely on raw foods to obtain.
Mm-hmm.
How would you like your food dead on arrival? You know, that's what we're looking at in the long term, is that there is a great push within this realm to see that used on a widespread basis.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's good, it's great for lengthening the shelf life of products when they're moving all around the globe.
You know, I have one comment that I always make when people ask me about irradiation, and it generally makes everybody very angry with me, but I make it anyway. And that is what food irradiation is designed to do, essentially, is make fecal matter safe to eat. And so if we make fecal matter safe to eat, which is to say we kill all of the pathogens that inhabit that fecal matter, and thus we can eat the lettuce or whatever without getting sick, what is to prevent them from trying to keep fecal matter out of the food? I mean, it's kind of like taking away all of their incentive to be clean if you can kill all the pathogens and they can serve up dirty food and you won't get sick.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two things that I worry about with respect to food irradiation and sterilization. One, it kills all the good stuff in the food. It makes the food dead. And the other thing is that really removes the incentive to keep, you know, the pathogens out of food in the first place.
Right. It allows those the slaughter lines to keep moving really fast.
Right.
Now,
right.
if we really want to deal with this, we need to deal with the sanitation issues.
Which is what you said. You've got to keep it out at the source, right?
Yeah, but at the slaughterhouse itself, you have to, you know, you have to go at such a speed where the workers can do their job in a hygienic way and not get sloppy. But, you know, part of that is that we also rely on a lot of unskilled and inexperienced labor to do work. And,
right.
You know, the whole process has been...
Yes.
You know, it doesn't cost as much anymore the way they've broken it down.
Well, Nicole, here at the food chain, we have a saying, cheap food isn't.
Mm-mm, it costs a whole lot.
Let's go to Margaret. Margaret, welcome to the food chain.
Hi, I'm nauseated listening to the show this morning. It's worse than we all know.
Yeah.
I think these monster scientists and these beast businessmen that were educated by university poisonous professors of depopulation need to have a large-scale class action lawsuit. I mean, as far as I know, it's illegal to poison populaces.
Well, what would you sue them for?
For poisoning people.
Well,
poisoning
us. I would sue them for trying to make our food safe.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is a pathetic excuse for a paycheck.
Margaret, I have a question for you. If they're able to become the food safety totalitarians that they want to become, what kind of food will they allow us to eat?
It will be food that is designed for slow kill. They want to depopulate the world.
What do you mean slow kill?
Slow kill meaning now we're fatigued. So we go to the...
You mean kill us?
Yes, slow kill the people.
Oh, goodness.
It's for slow kill, I'm telling you, Michael.
Thank you, Margaret. I don't want to hear that.
It's true.
All right. We're going to have to take a quick break. Folks, this is the food chain getting wild around here. But I want to ask you, what kind of food will the food totalitarians allow us to eat? I bet you Nicole Johnson has some ideas, and we'll find out what those ideas are when we get back from this break. This is the food chain. Michael Olson, your host. Nicole Johnson, our guest. Nicole is a very important person because the Pew Family Trust wouldn't have anything to do with her, so we know she's important. What do you think, folks? 800-642-665, 831-479-1080, right back. Do stay tuned. Give us a ring if you can. Well, holy smokes, Nicole Johnson, as a citizen journalist and as a mother, you've got all of these wonderful organizations like Food and Water Watch, Pew Family Trust in there, Make Our Food Safe, and the Monsanto Corporation all ganging up to take total control of the food chain and make our food safe. So what kind of food, Nicole, do these food totalitarians want to serve your children?
Well, it will be... it's been the kind of food that I've tried to protect them from their whole life. It won't be your whole food, you know, clean, free of pesticides, all of that. You're going to see food that is travels a long way, that is very likely produced in other countries. The effects of this kind of legislation will be that it's going to be a lot harder for American farmers, produce, people who grow fruits and vegetables, they're going to be competing directly against, you know, farmers in other countries, but under a major handicap, because those farmers in other countries, they're not under the same sorts of regulations, and nothing in this bill is going to change that.
Well,
it's going to be a lot easier for international corporations to move food products from one subsidiary to another and import them here.
Roy, you're a farmer. You feel safe with this stuff?
Well, I don't agree with this proposed legislation. What I've read so far, and is, does your guest have the House bill on this?
Well, the House bill is passed already, as I understand it.
Yes.
Okay, so where is it at? Is it in the Senate? Is it in conference?
It's in the Senate.
It's in the Senate.
What's the bill number?
510,
S-510.
SB 510?
Yep.
Okay. No, I'm not for it, Michael. I think we need to let science and farmers work these details out. I agree with your guess that there are some issues that come along with feedlot, you know, food production and the way animals are fed corn, like cattle or steer at the last 4 months of their lives and to beef them up. There are definitely some issues there. But we need to expose that through scientific research and not do this heavy-handed top-down federal law trying to control every jot and tittle of food production in the country. I think it's wrong.
Thank you, Rory.
Thank you.
Bye. You bet. We're going to go quickly to Bob. Bob, you feel safe with this stuff, Bob?
Oh, no. I think your guest put her finger on the real thing when quoting the CED about too many farmers. What is going on here is a reduction in the number of farmers. I posted on Metro Farms Forum a quote about Thomas Jefferson saying that you needed a certain percentage of people living on the land who were self-sufficient in order to preserve democracy. And I hope that people would look at that.
And that's what they're most afraid of, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they've already got pretty much a good control of the food with regards to the people in the cities.
Yeah.
But then again, so do we farmers. And it's a struggle. And if we're out here, we have a certain amount of control of some of the food as producers. But you know, we can simply stop producing or stop selling. Although they've taken away our Fourth Amendment rights and have the right to enter our property at any time.
Bob, we're out of time. Thank you so much for that call. Nicole Johnson, thank you for joining us. And, boy, you got to quit frightening those Pew Family Trust people. You should be ashamed of yourself.
I've just begun fighting, Michael.
Well, thank you for joining us. Folks,
thank you for
joining us, too. Remember, cheap food is it. Ha-ha. So stay tuned next week.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.